The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is A Numbers Game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, however you're taking us in this morning. We sure do appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin.
Hello.
Producer number nine. So much more than a producer. Live at Bar Canada the day. Downtown Las Vegas. How you doing, man?
Doing well. Doing well.
This is one of these rare mornings, and we do this 5 days a week, 12 months a year. Done it for, what, 7.5 years now? We don't really, you know, we always launch into what are people betting, and we will do that later with college basketball. Jared Smith will be here to discuss that. Kai McKeon from Three Man Weave. Jason Weingart with all his bets. This is one of these rare mornings, Kelly, where we have all kinds of, like, betting and potential betting news. The potential betting news, which I'm not sure it's betting news, but it is the NFL. So we must discuss here off the top is, and we'll get to the hip drop in a minute because that tackle has been banned. But this just came down right before the show because yesterday they were saying, well, the NFL bet on the will the NFL owners vote on this new kickoff proposal? Yeah. They weren't sure if they were going to vote on it today or not. They have, and it has passed.
I'm a little shocked it just got it came about this quickly because the reports you were hearing a couple days out of the meetings was there's kind of this, you know, strong opinion to push it back like a year and consider this more. But no, we are here. New kickoff,
people. When they want to do something, they do something quick. So this is a format that originated in the XFL. This is it. Visually, it will remind you immediately. You'll be like, oh, yeah, I remember that from the XFL. New alignment rules. And it's pretty complicated, too, in terms of explaining it. Once we see it in action, we'll get it. We'll do a visual of it, too. But the new alignment rules represent the most significant on-field rule change for the NFL in years. And what it's the purpose of this is actually, yes, to continue to reduce the number of concussions and head injuries and big collisions in the NFL. But also in this case, to reverse more than a decade of declining return rates. It'll go into effect for a year, but only in they only make it a year because they're anticipating tweaks to it afterwards. They only anticipate changing it ever. But here are the nuts and bolts of it, and there's a lot of nuts and there's a lot of bolts. There really is. The kicker's going to be by himself. That's the first thing. The kicker's going to be by himself at the 35-yard line. After kicking it, Kelly, he won't be able to cross midfield until the ball's in play. The ball will be considered in play if the returner catches it, or if the ball hits the ground in the landing zone, or if the ball gets to the end zone. More on the landing zone later. Coming up. I don't mean to tease a landing zone, but hold on. Coverage team is going to be lined up together. The other 10 players on the kicking team, by the way. So the other 10 players on the kicking team, kicker by himself at the 35. The other 10 players will be lining up at the receiving team's 40-yard line. Yeah. Visually, that'll be the biggest shock to people.
Right, yeah. Everybody's lined up on one side of the field.
Each player has to have at least 1 foot on the 40 before the play can start. Also, the kicking team has to have 5 players on each side of the ball, so they won't be able to load up on one side, so it doesn't really change onside kick things in that respect. As for the receiving team, most of it, will be at the 35-yard line. They got a 5-yard setup zone between the 30 and the 35. At least seven players in the receiving team must have their foot on the 35-yard line. They can also, the receiving team, move 2 players who are in the setup zone, but who aren't touching the 35-yard line. Those 2 players will be lined up outside the hashes. Oh my God, this is complicated. Okay. Receiving team can have 2 returners. They can put 1 or 2 returners back to field the football, but if they decide to use just 1 runner, I hate when they use utilize for no reason. I could just use the word use. They decide to use just 1 runner, then the extra player will have to line up in the setup zone between the 30 and the 35. All right, let's show the visuals. There's the visualization on the screen if you're watching at VSiN.com. I don't know if you can see that, but that's the big thing is just the kicker by himself back there at the 35. Everybody else is on the other side of the field. Again, very small distance between the coverage team and the receiving team there between the 40 and the 35-yard line.
And then what you're going to have, basically you're being penalized for kicking touchbacks. So there is an incentive for the kicker to kick it into the landing zone so you get a return, but nobody can move until the returner has the ball or it's...
And nobody's getting a 30-yard start to bash into somebody else. For a kickoff, by the way, for a kickoff after a safety, the formations will be the same.
And onside is likely going to change too, Gil. I don't know if that... I haven't gotten to exact details this morning, but what was being considered was onside you would not be able to do until the fourth quarter, and you'd have to declare that you are doing an onside kick.
Do you have to
say... I'm not even getting to
that. Do you have to say something, and then at the end of the sentence go, I do declare?
Because that would make it fun. It's like Michael Scott, I declare bankruptcy.
I do declare.
I declare an onside kick.
What is the landing zone, you ask? I thought you'd never ask. Okay, that's between the receiving team's goal line and the receiving team's 20. The coverage team and the blockers on the receiving team. This is the other point, Kelly. It goes on, like the details of this. The coverage team and the blockers on the receiving team cannot move until the football has either been fielded or touches the ground in that landing zone, as you were just trying to describe. No fair catches. Fair catches are donezo.
Yes.
If the kickoff is caught on the fly in the landing zone, then there will definitely be return because fair catches are prohibited. Oh, my God. There's also three different variations of touchbacks. Sorry to start the show this way, all, but this is kind of...
I tried to simplify. Yeah, just go read up on your own.
Yeah, touchback at the 40, touchback at the 30, touchback at the 20. We'll have to see it in action.
Yeah, we will.
Well,
we
since
will.
I just teased that,
I'm not really quick to judge on this one, though, Gil. It's a radical change, so it's one we're going to have to get used to.
Okay, but here's...
But I'm okay with more returns.
Let me just explain those since I brought them up, because people are going to wonder. 40-yard line, kickoff doesn't make it past the return team's 20, then the ball's considered out of bounds. Return team will get possession at the 40. Or 25 yards from the spot of the kick. Mm-hmm. If the ball's kicked out of bounds, the receiving team will get the ball at its own 40, or the spot where the ball went out of bounds. 30-yard line touchback is if the ball's kicked in the end zone on the fly, then the receiving team gets a touchback at its own 30. That also applies if the ball's kicked out of the back of the end zone. Touchback at the 20 is if a ball hits the ground in the landing zone and then rolls into the end zone, doesn't get returned. So, my God, we have a lot to learn. Okay. From a betting standpoint... There's no way to really know now, but the number of returns will be increased for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess in theory, then the number of possibilities of much better field position, even by rule, right? Before even a return, even by rule, benefits the offense, all while reducing, again, collisions. That's the, you know, one of the main points of all this. So I guess, you know, in theory, you can say scores will increase. And in theory, you can say from a betting standpoint that scores will increase at least at the beginning at a rate higher than books could post the totals and adjust. This is all theory.
Right.
This
it's all theory.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, I think we can kind of bring in the hip drop tackle too with that.
This is where I was going.
Because do we really think that's guy? I don't. In theory, yes, it's probably going to come into play once in a while and be a big moment in a game. But how much is it going to affect things overall? I don't know right now.
See, I think the banning of the hip drop tackle, which, by the way, we all learned that term when Mark Andrews got hurt for the Ravens this year, because I don't think any of us had ever heard that term before. The hip drop tackle, for lack of a better way of explaining, when the defender drops his body and essentially risks that the offensive player's hips and legs will get caught under his, but the defender is dropping their body. Now, that one to me, you're right. We can never anticipate when that's going to get called. The hip drop thing is real problematic because you're making it even more subjective for the officials. You're exposing them to much more criticism. It also goes against the game itself, right? So kickoffs, because kickoffs are just a, I shouldn't say just a, but because kickoffs are a special teams play and are not the standard from scrimmage play that takes up most of a football game, we're able to sort of allow it in our football brains. Yeah. But the banning of the hip drop tackle is going to be problematic for referees, subject them to a lot of criticism. And it's also just now we're going to get, you know how we say with roughing the passer has become such that we all say, oh, he got flagged for playing football. This is going to be that on steroids.
Yes.
Good luck tackling Derrick Henry without hip dropping.
Yeah.
So it's going, with the hip drop, unlike the kickoff thing, which I think we can all live with and we'll all learn to like it and accept the rules. I think the hip drop is just going to create frustration for people watching football like who are fans,
yes.
bettors who are going to get the worst of that. Right. And you're just going to be like, really? Now you're throwing the flag on that. How? What else was he supposed to do?
Right.
Right. So that's just going to annoy us beyond belief. And it goes back to the whole notion, the hip drop does, of we're just from a much more macro standpoint, we're just going to have to start to let go of all of our preconceived notions. These little paper cuts, right? Death by a thousand paper cuts. When I was a kid, Billy White Shoes Johnson and Deion Sanders and Devin Hester and Mike Nelms, that's for the smart people out there, whoever your favorite kickoff or punt, you know, kickoff returner was, those days are over where they're going to, you know, the most exciting play in football, they field it from the goal line and then avoid people coming, you know, a million miles an hour at them. The roughing the passer rules that we've had to come to accept, that's the big one that I think of all the time. But now this one with the hip drop, depending on how closely, this could be one of those things where they really enforce it during the preseason and then they back off once the regular season starts.
I have a feeling that's exactly what we're going to see.
I hope so.
But you never know, right?
You never know.
And then, also, could it be like, remember when they were doing the reviewable PI, they were trying to take that from the CFL and it was such a disaster like early in the season?
Oh, yeah.
They kind of just like gave up on it. I think if they enforce this heavily early in the year, they're going to have to back off of it a little bit.
I guess what I'm saying is that's just another one of these myriad of paper cuts of we're just going to have to, you know, disabuse ourselves of the notion of how we know football to be.
Yep.
And it's a violent sport by nature. They're trying to make it less violent, and that is inherently an incongruous effort. And so it's going to be frustrating on that account. But those are the kickoff rules, man. Whew. That's a massive rule change. Betting implications? Well, time will tell. Drew Dinsick on this. Shohei, Jonte, what a morning. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today and get your first year for only $199. That's instead of the typical price of $240. Just use promo code ANG. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for an entire year, including our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access, plus access to our March Madness betting hub with picks for every game of the tournament. Remember to use promo code ANG, though.
ANG, like a numbers game.
Get your first year of VSiN Pro access for only $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Live from Bar Canada here at the D on a numbers game. I was just saying off air, too, with both the Jonte and the Shohei stuff, there's little details that need to be fleshed out. One on the Shohei case, Shohei made the distinction of did not willingly wire the money. That's a huge distinction of I wire the money, right? So that one's a little clearer. The Jonte case, they mentioned that DraftKings says, oh, it's the biggest winner of those two nights in question. And then they throw in the $10,000, $20,000 detail, and you're left to assume that it was at a legal shop, but I don't know. Maybe it was at an offshore somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who knows?
So those are complicated. We'll move on from that. By the way, more NFL news. They've moved the trade deadline back from after week 8 to week 9. Not a big deal, but there you go. There's another bit of NFL news. We bring back Drew Dinsick from both the NBC Sports Bet the Edge and Deep Dive podcast, the latter of which he co-hosts with Andy Molitor, the former of which with Jay Croucher at NBC Sports. Drew, the other, you know, the thing that we were talking about earlier was the new kickoff rule. Can we draw a line from that to a betting implication? And the other one is the hip drop tackle, which is just putting a lot of burden on the officials. It's going to cause a lot of frustration for everybody, fans, bettors alike, and really reminds one of when they brought in more of the helmet-to-helmet definition, you know, when a receiver would, you know, naturally in a football play would lean over and then a defender would do the same thing and then they flag the helmet to helmet. You're like, it's a football play. What else is he supposed to do? So it leaves it open for the hip drop as well. I'm curious if you think either of the kickoff or the hip drop has betting implications, and if so, which more?
Yeah, I think in the long in the long arc, these are type of rule changes that should induce higher scoring, a slight uptick in totals. We're coming off of a season where totals were aggressively adjusted down because of the quality of quarterback play in general. And I think this is kind of, it's very, very soft, emphasis here. And I doubt we see lots of these calls, but I think in the long run, it's going to kind of take a little bit of the juice out of the defense. The defenses, the refs tend to take these types of new rules very casually early on. In fact, if we see, 6 or 7 weeks go by and it hasn't been called and people are like, kind of forget that the rule exists. And maybe somebody spins up a story when one isn't called that's somewhat consequential. But like, remember when they put that rule in and nobody's actually calling it? Well, like this is an example of where it would have mattered. Right. And then eventually it starts to get called a little bit. And then, maybe 3 years down the road, it's more regularly enforced. But I have a tough time seeing that the hip drop is ultimately going to be a macro, major portion of any type of game flow. The kickoff rule, a little bit different. I do think you're going to basically in general going to see better field position. This looks like it has opportunity to, to give special teams coordinators a little more to do in terms of just coming up with something interesting as far as kickoff goes. And I think if you're given, teams with, particularly the elite teams, elite quarterbacks, giving them the ball at the 25, 30, 35 yard line in general, I think you're going to see pretty, maybe a decent uptick in scoring from some of the better teams. And, particularly in end of game situations, this really does change, I think, a lot of the calculus of any sort of in-game model in the fourth quarter in particular. If you're, if you're expecting an end of game score and answer type of situation with field goals, and then I think this this makes the calculus a little different now with the shorter field to shorter yardage to game required to make a field goal. So I think ultimately these are going to probably make scoring a little higher, and I doubt that it's enough of a swing that you're going to see adjustments in the market close until you actually start to see the proof in the actual scores of the game.
That's what we hypothesized earlier on the show as well. Let's switch over to the NBA in a league where, let's just take last night just off the top. The Spurs beat the Suns without Wembanyama, because of course they did. The Hawks came back from 30 to beat the Celtics, because, of course they did. And the Rockets are never losing another game and are trying to make the play-in. I don't know how how people say about other people who bet other sports that they don't, like, I don't know how you people bet this sport. Well, Drew and Kelly, I don't know how you people bet this sport. let me just say that. How is your season gone and what do you like tonight?
NBA season's gone well, and last night in particular was pretty sick. I had the Hawks, which was enjoyable because I was ready to turn it off after first quarter down 22. I'm like, okay, well, that was a dumb bet. And then they win outright, which was wild. Celtics in postseason form, as we were joking behind closed doors. the Rockets are a fascinating story. It surely looks like they are putting some sincere pressure on the Golden State Warriors for the 10 seed and a spot in the play-in. They play each other early in May. I think we're about a week away. Maybe it's 6 days away from a head-to-head between the Rockets and the Warriors that will have it's like extreme play in potential. And the fact that this is all happening after the Rockets lost Alperen Şengün, who is one of the most improved players of the season, is amazing. They move Amen Thompson into the basically to the dunker spot. He's an incredible defender, and it just has kind of unlocked his offense because he can't shoot to save his life, but he can absolutely finish well around the rim. So it's interesting and fascinating, and obviously they're well coached. Ime Udoka is a good coach. Like, we kind of knew this already, and very cool to see them. See him kind of put that group of young players in a position to win basketball. The games tonight, I'm pretty fired up for, actually. Yesterday was a bit of a thud. You had, what, 7-8 games where you had double-digit spreads? It was a lot of non-competitive basketball expected. The opposite tonight. I mean, we have 4 games. All 4 of them mean something, pretty significant. You have both Golden State and LA fighting for their lives on the road. LA is playing you know, shorthanded against a Milwaukee team that's laying 9. That's a big number. Golden State amazingly favored in Miami, even though Miami has thrown the switch. I'm assuming that's related to Miami is going to be doing some just in general, some shenanigans with some of these questionable players. But I am expecting Jimmy and Bam there. So I'm a little surprised that Golden State's getting that much respect. I didn't play either of those two games. The two later tips, I like Oklahoma City a lot at -1 against New Orleans. New Orleans is playing without Brandon Ingram right now. I think the market is wildly under representing his impact to what a fair price would be for the New Orleans Pelicans. And, you know, the just in general, like the Pelicans are going to go through a little bit of a tough stretch here, as far as I can tell you. And I actually think Dallas can close the gap on them for the division. So keep an eye on that. And then lastly, I played Dallas on the road against Sacramento. Really, really cool game. I need Dallas to win this one. I have bets on Sacramento to miss the playoffs that are looking like it's not going to come. It's not even going to have a chance the way that Phoenix is playing right now. Sacramento might just get in as a 6th seed, but this game matters a ton. I think Dallas should be favored by about 1.5 here. And I just in general, not a believer in what I'm seeing from the Sacramento Kings, despite them burying some of these teams who are playing in bad rest spots and just in general, a little bit depleted right now. So Mavs and the Thunder are two pretty got pretty decent stake on both of those right around pick.
All right, Drew, I need a rapid fire 20-second answers to the following. One, we just talked about the Rockets. Would you bet them to make the playoffs?
Not they're going to have to win 2 games. I don't see that happening necessarily. I think getting into the play-in is very viable, but I think that's probably where it ends for them. A little bit too young of a team, and just in general in a game where things slow down, I think they could get stopped.
All right, tennis. Do you have a play today?
Tennis. I am heavily loaded on Elena Rybakina to win the entire Miami Open. I am not understanding why she is around plus 100 to do this. After Iga went down yesterday, this is now a very clear path for her. She
sure is.
Draws Maria Sakkari today. She's a minus 263 favorite. I make her closer to minus 400 in that matchup. Then she would get the winner of Putintseva Azarenka, where she should be closer to minus 1,000. And then any of the four women on the top of the draw right now, I'm assuming it's probably going to be Pegula, but Collins is playing really well. Garcia is playing really well. Alexandrova, obviously coming off that huge win against Iga, is playing well. Well, it's whichever of those four women emerge, and it's anyone's guess, I think is drawn dead against Rybakina on the final.
Right.
So Rybakina plus 100 is probably, this is one of the bigger tennis bets I've had in a while.
Completely agree with that. 10-second answer. Iga, cause for concern or a one-off getting crushed by Alexandrova?
One-off. Yeah, it was a one-off.
All right.
Although cause for concern is that when the going gets tough, man, she needs a better plan B. Like, she just seems to lose it. I don't understand.
Yeah, she seems to get flustered. And last thing, we have a report from Tom Pelissero that Commanders want to draft J.J. McCarthy at 2. Kelly and I are about to talk about that. You think that's real or just lying season?
That seems like engagement farming to me.
Define that for those who don't understand what you meant.
We're in the midst of March Madness. You got to do something to get clicks. Saying J.J. McCarthy is going to go too.
Thank you, Drew. Coming back with that.
The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you take it, we appreciate it. We're grateful. Really thankful that you could allow us to be part of your morning each and every Monday through Friday. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, live from Barcanada, the barrage, Kelly, right here at the D, downtown Las Vegas. Glorious, majestic, beautiful, clean downtown Las Vegas.
Hey, they just renovated the Fremont.
You were saying.
Hotel, casino. It's pretty nice over there.
It's pretty darn nice.
Go over there for a little Dunkin' Donuts sometimes. It's very, very nice.
We get tweets of beating the book. Just let me read a few of these before we get to Kai here. Clark, who did Drew like today for tennis? He didn't. He just likes Elena Rybakina to win the women's side now that Iga is out. Las Vegas 514. Yo, any truth in the McCarthy thing? I'm going to lose my blankety blank mind. Please tell me it's all bull blankety blank. We'll get to that momentarily in Las Vegas. And then Larry Fresher killing me with these starts in 10 minutes tennis plays, running downstairs as I tweet. people don't trip. Here's the thing. If I had given it out earlier, it would have been at a price that I would have said, don't bet it. And then I waited and it ended up being a price you could bet it at. So
there you go.
It worked out that way.
I see Zach Cohen's on the same play as well.
Is he?
Yes. You and Zach aligned.
Zach Cohen. Zach Cohen and I matching. I like it. Again, VSiN.com/picks for every pick in every sport by every host and every guest here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Let's talk some college hoops. We went a full hour this morning without talking college hoops. That's why Kai McKeon and his glorious hair comes in from Three Man Weave, courteous of the Progressive Guest Line. How you doing, Kai?
I'm good, Gil. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So wait, share what you shared off air, which is that you, James Patrick Root, Matty Cox, and yourself, the three-man weavers, you were out here for the round of 64 and round of 32, and now you're coming back for the Sweet 16?
We are, and you can see the sunburn on my face a little bit still from this past weekend. It's going to stay because we're going back this weekend, Sweet 16, Elite Eight weekend, to do live shows from Circus Stadium Swim, right in a cabana out there, and just going to have a good time and hopefully the sunshine and enjoy some basketball outside and talking hoops.
That's awesome. So you're doing a show from the cabana. Outstanding.
From the cabana. All right.
Yeah. This past Thursday and Friday, great weather. And then it went back to crapola after that.
Yeah. Really did.
Yeah.
It looks a little up in the air for this weekend.
A little up in the air. Not going to lie. A little up in the air.
I know. I peaked a little bit. Yeah.
It's almost, guys, as if, I just want to throw this out there. It's almost as if there's a change in the climate. Does anybody know about that? By the way, what sunblock are you going to use this time, by the way? You got to up it, I think.
Clearly a better version. I was good everywhere else except right in the middle of my face where the only spot on TV matters.
Yeah. You're fine, Kai. You just tell people you were wearing a baseball cap.
That's right.
Like all day yesterday. That's all it looks like.
There you go.
All right, let's get to it. No NIT or CIT for you? You don't partake?
Not for me. I can't get into it, Gil, and that sounds bad as a college basketball fan, but I just can't. I don't care about it.
Wow. Okay. That's it.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Now let's go to the big dance. That's all right. I'm not judging you. to merit for Kai, by the way. Mark that down. All right. Thursday. Let's just do these by day. I'll do them chronologically by day. Let's start with Clemson and Arizona. This is sort of toggled back between 7 and 6.5 in favor of the Wildcats. Do you think that number is correct, sir?
I lean towards Clemson on the number. I just have a hard time trusting Arizona fully because I don't know what version of Caleb Love we're going to get. And if Arizona's down early or maybe a little bit in the second half where it's dicey, it's close, I worry about Caleb Love in late game situations. Could definitely blow Clemson out. However, Clemson's post game is pretty darn good. And Arizona, surprisingly, has not been able to guard the post very well this year. I think also Hall and Shefflin can give Ballo issues if they step out on the perimeter. So I kind of like Clemson here at 7.
Okay. By the way, we're showing 7.5 now.
Yeah, 7.5, sure.
Ticking up, so we even get a hook more with that. A half hour later, and I like this, so the Clemson, Arizona is the 6-2 game out west. Mm-hmm. Half hour later in the east region, the 5-1 game between San Diego State and UConn. This is up to 11 on the Huskies. Yeah.
And I'm not going to bet against UConn. I refuse to. They have no weakness, it seems. Everything they do is perfect. They almost look bored when they play offense sometimes because it's so easy for them to score. Obviously, a rematch of the title game from last year, which was not close. I kind of worry that it's not going to be either this game. It is a big spread, but I just think UConn's too good. San Diego State's going to run everything through the post. Obviously, UConn's defense in the post is pretty darn good with Johnson and Klingon in the middle there. So it's either a stay away or maybe UConn if I feel like betting it.
All right, back to the West region. Alabama, North Carolina. This is the one I'm looking most forward to on Thursday. With the Heels favored by 4 total, by the way, here at 173.5.
Love it. Yeah, going to be a huge, huge scoring game. I wouldn't be surprised if both teams got to 100. We've seen that already a few times in the first round. Transition like crazy. The difference is probably UNC's defense. Both teams are awesome offensively. UNC is good defensively, and Alabama is not. And I think that's probably the difference here. UNC, the post-up defense, Alabama's post-up defense is suspect. Baycott can't exploit that. Alabama's gotten beat off the dribble all season, and that's a huge problem against RJ Davis and a ball screen heavy team in UNC. So I have a hard time trusting Alabama's defense. It's a slight lean at -4 for UNC.
Yeah, I have my Alabama future 60-1, which I made in like May or June. I can't remember what month of last year. You ever have those futures where you actually have them and you're like, there's absolutely no chance of this winning?
Yes.
You don't even think
all
about
the time.
It. Yeah. Illini and Iowa State, this is even ticked down. This is the last one to tip off on Thursday. Iowa State now down to just a 1-point favorite in this game.
Yeah, best offense in the country versus best defense per KenPom, efficiency-wise. I think Illinois is really hard to stop. Terrence Shannon in transition, if you guys have watched him, he's a bull. He cannot be stopped, like the Juggernaut from X-Men. Once he gets going, you cannot stop him. Now, Illinois' lack of true point guard worries me a little bit against Iowa State's defense. They force a ton of turnovers. Illinois has gotten away with not having a true point guard because Shannon and Domask are very, very good basketball players, obviously, but maybe it rears its head in this matchup. Iowa State's offense is better than in the past, but still it's a weak point for them. Illinois' D, though, has been woeful this season, especially down the stretch. It's a very tough call from a spread, from a money line perspective here. I'm leaning slightly towards Illinois, just a more dynamic offense. And again, Shannon is just so tough to stop. But I always say it's defense is for real. So it's going to be a tough call.
Shannon is unbelievable. He looks like everybody else is in mud when he's playing.
Yes.
And the other great part about the Illini, Kelly, I know you'll appreciate that. This is that every time the ball goes to Dane Danger, the little part of my head just goes, Danger!
Danger!
Watch yourself. Sorry, I'm just being stupid. But it really does. That's how the brain works. Okay, before we get to the Friday games, let me just ask you this, because we were among so many moaning about how the schedule was on Saturday and Sunday, and I'm at home watching it on TV, and how they've just, you know, there's two standalone games early, and they just push back the schedule where they're not even halfway through the Saturday or Sunday schedules at 7 p.m. Eastern, for goodness sake, which may not bother people on Saturday, but certainly bothers people on Sunday when, you know, a lot of people probably miss that A&M Houston flourish at the end because it was so late. You being at a sports book or at a pool or wherever you were, did you notice it in the same way? Do you feel like people in a book felt that same thing?
Yeah, we were outside at Stadium Swim, actually. And yes, the annoying part was the beginning, right? You had all that gap in between, and it seemed like we were just kind of waiting on another game to start. And it's unfortunate to do that. We want constant action. And then all of a sudden, it was a flurry at the end. Like you said, most people, at least we, went home and went our separate ways and watched from different bars. But it is unfortunate they scheduled it that way. I don't know why.
It's when they went to four networks, they made a priority. Like, we're just not, we're going to let everybody see every second of every game. And then you leave yourself open to the Purdue blowout, which then is a huge hole in your day. Friday, chronological order. First one, NC State Marquette South Region, the only double-digit seed remaining, the Wolfpack. They're 6.5-point dogs here.
Yeah, Marquette, heavy ball screen offense, best point guard in the country, arguably, in Tyler Kolek. NC State, really poor defending ball screens this season, but DJ Burns on the other end, who's becoming a tournament hero, he's pretty unstoppable. Can Marquette stop his his post-ups? They run offense through him. Iguodara is a really good defender, but he's giving up about 50, 60 pounds still. It's going to be a tough matchup for him. NC State doesn't make any mistakes. That's part of the reason why they've done so well in this tournament run. But I lean towards Marquette here. I think NC State's slightly easier to game plan for.
Burns is passing so good, too, out of the post.
So good.
Gonzaga and Purdue, half an hour later in the Midwest, the 1-5 with the Boilermakers favored by 5.
Whoever gets in foul trouble, EK versus Edie, both teams run their offense through them. If one of those guys is in foul trouble, it's bad news for the other team, or excuse me, for that team. I lean towards Purdue slightly. I think their supporting cast is better than Gonzaga's, but it really does matter who can stay on the floor between Edie and EK.
Back to the South, 4-1 game. Houston favored by 4 over the Blue Devils of Duke.
Really torn here. Duke, a team I thought could win the title in the preseason. Now I'm starting to believe it again. Their offense looks fantastic. McCain is a star, the NBA prospect for sure. Filipowski, obviously. Houston's defense is amazing. I'm really rooting for Kelvin Sampson. I am concerned in this game. I have a slight lean towards Duke.
Kelvin Sampson, who refuses to foul up 3 late in games.
Tough.
Half hour later, Tennessee now up to a 3-point favorite in the Midwest region in the 2-3 game against Creighton.
It's really hard to bully Creighton when Tennessee kind of does that to teams. However, I just hate how Creighton cannot force turnovers. They don't do it. Basically the worst team in the country at forcing turnovers. I think that gives them a really thin margin for error. And Creighton really relies on scoring inside, scoring from two. Tennessee's a fantastic 2-point percentage defense. I lean towards Tennessee.
What's your favorite of all of those, Guy?
Man, favorite of all of those. I'll go Clemson 7.5.
Clemson plus 7.5. Kai McKeon, everybody, at KY_3MW. All of Three Man Weave's plays and thoughts. Pithy thoughts. 3MW_CBB. And their live show from the Cabana. Is it live or is it a podcast? Which is it?
Live.
Live.
Woohoo!
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Three Man Weavers. Thank you, Kai. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys.
JJ McCarthy and Season Wins next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today. Get your first year for only $199. That's instead of the typical price of $240. Just use promo code ANG. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for an entire year. That includes our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access, plus access to our March Madness betting hub with picks for every game of the tournament. Remember, though, to use promo code ANG.
ANG, like a numbers game, the fine program you're listening to right now.
Some say. Get your first year of VSiN Pro access for only $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. This gentleman was kind enough to fill in for me for a few days.
That's right.
When I was in Miami. Back after the Super Bowl. He is a VSiN host, and he's also with Fox Sports Radio. He joins us now. It's Jared Smith, everybody. How you doing, Jared?
Oh, I'm great. I had a blast. It was an experience walking across Fremont Street at 6 in the morning. That was a first for me. but just the overall vibes of the show, it was a very fun experience. Kelly just helped me so much. Just feel nice at home there. Over at the D.
Well, thrilled that you could do it. And by the way, you got to be careful at that hour that you don't get shanked or shivved. By the way, we're
it's an interesting TV. Hour, yeah, to yeah. be out there, yeah.
Yeah. One of those is a subset of the other. If you want a definition of shiv and shank, I'm not sure which is which. Jared comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Let's talk some college hoops, man. How's your tournament been so far?
It's been okay. The first round certainly was unique. Friday was fantastic. The weekend was a struggle. And, you know, we're in this town. We like to bet underdogs, right? We're trying to be on the sharper side of the ledger.
Yeah.
But it was a chalky weekend. So if you were a fan of the favorites, you probably made out okay. I'm more of a dog better, especially taking points in the tournament's always something I love to do. And it was not a very successful weekend for that strategy.
Yeah, Thursday was, I think, all the bettors that I know, including myself, Thursday was rough in March Madness. Yeah. Friday was a bounce back. And then, just when everybody had gotten out, we had like a few guys who tweeted who were like, oh, I'm just doing the underdog money line strategy. And they just got murdered, I think.
Ugh.
That's the last we heard about that. We didn't promote it, but everybody else had sort of come to that as their strategy of like, hey, I'm just going to bet the underdogs on the money line. Okay, what do you like Sweet 16? What do you like best?
Well, obviously the early action's on Illinois, and I think it makes sense if you talk about where Iowa State is as a team right now. I think their number's about as high as it's going to get. They've had about as good of a 2-3 week stretch as maybe anyone in college basketball. Of course, beating Houston in the Big 12 title game, they have looked dominant in their first two tournament games. So again, you get that number to the point where, okay, can Iowa State improve based off of what we've seen over the last 3 weeks? Probably not. I think Illinois, on the other hand, because of the athletes that they have, most notably Terrence Shannon, the Iowa State press is going to be fascinating because Illinois doesn't have a true point guard. So how they handle this kind of quasi pressure that TJ Otzenberger likes to run, it's going to be interesting. But I think Shannon and Damask and even Hawkins, the big fella, I think those guys can really manage that press. And they have the athletes to run up and down with Iowa State. So while Houston struggled in that regard, I think the long rest for Brad Underwood, preparing for that unique style, and the markets agreed. I mean, this thing opened 2.5. We're getting close to a pick'em now. So I would say Illinois on the money line, you can find a plus 110. Still feels like a pretty decent bet. You might get a little bit of movement in your favor before the game.
Danger! Surprised you're not shouting that out every time we talk Illinois.
Danger!
Kelly, you got to shout that out. That rises to a level of a flagrant 2 that you didn't
I like it.
Yeah. Okay, what besides the Illini?
Well, Marquette looks really strong. NC State's kind of the Cinderella team right now, so it's tough to lay a big number against them. But Marquette, to me, Tyler Kolek, the whole question coming into the tournament, is Tyler Kolek healthy? Yeah. I think we've answered that question now. And if he is healthy, I don't know if the number fully reflects that, because, you know, six games without him, they were 3-3. You saw Cam Jones take over. And listen, Cam Jones, he's probably a starting, you know, number one guard, a scoring guard on most teams in college basketball. But because of how talented Marquette is, he's kind of the second fiddle to Kolek, even though they both kind of play different games. But it's obvious to me that Kolek's healthy. So you put Kolek now 100% on this Marquette roster. Frankly, they're a one seed with him healthy. And so I think them at plus 225, I saw a pretty decent number to make the Final Four. You know, they're in that bracket with Houston. Obviously, they're going to be an underdog in that game, probably in a 3-5 point underdog, somewhere in that range, depending on how the Sweet 16 goes. But Duke's look pretty good, right? And they're a shorter, you know, Houston's a shorter favorite in the Sweet 16 than Marquette is. So I feel good about Marquette at least getting to the Elite Eight. And I really like Tyler Kolek. And I think that maybe increases their number just a little bit from what we're currently seeing. So I think Marquette, maybe not necessarily in this game, or if you want to employ the rollover strategy, that's certainly fine. But I think Marquette plus 225 to make the Final Four feels like a decent wager also.
Yeah, speaking of that, what's your instinct on the Final Four right now? If I said, okay, Jared, give me your Final Four teams, they will be... Because I know a lot of people are out there like, hey, what do I'm thinking about parlaying this stuff, which I'm not recommending here, but I'm saying people like to make that kind of fun bet.
Yeah, I don't mind parlaying within the region because you're guaranteed that one game won't start before the other ends. And, you know, to me, Las Vegas, Chris, a friend of mine, worked together, you know, just a fantastic professional bettor. Just he understands that layering of parlays, and he taught me that, and I employ that strategy sometimes. So I'm okay if, say, you think it is going to be Houston and Marquette in the Elite Eight, you want to throw a money line parlay of those two teams, you're guaranteed that the first game's going to end. It gives you an option to come out, you know, come on the other side, try to middle, you know, the dog on in the nightcap there. But I frankly think this is a chalky tournament. The one seeds were last year was the first year we've ever had no one seeds in the Elite Eight. That obviously is going to change this year. I would not be surprised if all four one seeds made the Final Four. I'm very high on UConn, obviously, no duh. In fact, I think 2-1 for them to win it. I mean, they're going to be at least a 2-3 point favorite over no matter who they face in the championship game. Purdue, everyone's down on Purdue, but I see a lot of improvements with the Boilermakers this year. I mean, obviously, everyone from last year's team is back. Lawyer and Smith, they were freshmen on the team that lost FDU last year. Now they're sophomores. But really, the key is Lance Jones, you know, the SIU transfer who was the Mo Val Defensive Player of the Year. That's an element they didn't have. They couldn't defend the perimeter last year, right? FDU ran those high pick and rolls, and their guards just got into the paint. Edie didn't have the athleticism to guard that. Well, now he looks a little bit more athletic and a little bit fresher and friskier this year. So I just think Purdue is much better suited to make a Final Four run. I don't love the fact that, you know, it just, you get that Tennessee Purdue game in the regional final, and it's Matt Barnes against Painter, and, you know, Rick Barnes against Matt Painter. Who's going to be
something's the gotta coach? Give.
Finally, yeah. One of those coaches has to finally get over the hump. I think that's going to be the matchup in the Elite Eight. Houston looks legit, but their defense kind of showed some vulnerability in the last game. They need to clean that up, especially against Duke. North Carolina looks fantastic, but I think Arizona might be the better team. So I would say Purdue, UConn are kind of like, all right, I feel really good about them in the Final Four. I think Houston, I feel okay about, but frankly, Marquette's coming on really strong, and that UNC Arizona game, if we get it, is going to be an absolute battle. I could see either one of those teams pulling that one out.
We mentioned this yesterday, but just talking about chalk tournaments, historically speaking, putting this in perspective, and Chris Velika, our friend, the Bear, did a great job of this on his Twitter feed. Only time that all number ones got to the Final Four was 2008. When that was the year that Kansas beat Memphis in overtime with that amazing comeback at the end of regulation. And then there's never been all one and twos in the Elite Eight, but the closest we've gotten, 2009, we had one versus two, one versus three, one versus three, one versus two. 2007, even closer, the closest we've ever gotten, one versus three, and then all the others were one versus two. So as close as you could possibly get two all ones and twos, but missing in 2007. So maybe this is the year. Real quick before we go, Jared, because I know you're a big baseball guy, and I don't know if you know this, but the baseball season starts in 48 hours. I'm not sure if you're aware of this.
What?
It's crept
up on us, didn't it?
I spent like 4 hours researching this, and it came up yesterday that we're doing a whole podcast on baseball here after the show with Jason and Mark Borchard. Jason will join us here momentarily as well. But you have a baseball thought specifically on the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I think they're a little undervalued. I mean, 83.5 wins, you might be able to find a better number out there, but that's kind of the prevailing market sentiment on Arizona. I mean, we're really down on Colorado, right? I think the Padres, just during the regular season, they just haven't proven to be that high-end team. Is there going to be any suspensions with Shohei Ohtani and the Dodgers? I'm not so sure. The Giants are kind of middling out there, but let's focus on Arizona. I mean, they're the same team as last year that, you know, made a really deep run in the National League postseason. And they added one of the best hitters, I think, in the entire field. Eugenio Suarez is going to, you know, play third base and maybe slug 40 or 50 home runs. So I don't see any reason why Arizona can't be, just above the 500 mark this year. I know the division is tough. You have to face the Dodgers and the Padres a little bit less than you normally would, though. And of course, you get a couple of middling teams in there and a real bottom feeder in the Rockies. So I think Arizona, high-end teams, Zach Gallen, Cy Young candidate, and absolutely over the win total this year for the Snake.
Jared, did you just refer to the Giants as middling? Is that what I heard just there?
Oh, they've had their moments.
This was going so well. It's going so well.
I apologize. No, I'm never getting invited.
No, you're always invited. Jared, pleasure to see you. Thank you for making the time, man.
Go and go.
At Jared Lee Smith, by the way. No relation to the former fireballer reliever Lee Smith of the 80s. Jared Lee Smith on Twitter. Very nice of Jared to make the time here. Speaking of baseball, Shohei thoughts from a guy who was all over it yesterday. Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.